Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And we've got Jeff Winninger on the show. You guys recognize him. He's a former LAPD commander, retired as a lieutenant, and now he's in Ohio, but he still jumps back and forth. So I appreciate you being on the show, Jeff. And it is remarkable. I mean, you know, look, whenever people come on the show, I do try to stack the stories that are mostly in their wheelhouse, but it kind of was the luck of the draw, because all these stories, I probably would have lined it up about the same way with LAPD stories, because that's just what was in the news from over the weekend. So it's just perfect fit today. Also, a shout out to our sponsors. We have Gulls at Gulls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor, and then we got Aero Precision USA, our arm sponsor, Gunlearn.com, Medicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, and TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com, and we don't charge anything extra for the gear, guys. So go to LeoRoundtable.com, check out the online store, and check out some of the cool gear, hats, coffee mugs, you know, that we've got on there as well. In fact, this is the old version of the coffee mug. The new one is bigger and better, arguably. Correct, Jeff?
It is. And it's in manufacturing right now.
Okay. All right, cool. So are we doing a $20 gift card giveaway today, or gift card code? Okay. So There you have it, guys. If you guys are watching the show and you're on the stream and you're interested in winning a free $20 gift card code, which means the first $20 is on them and it's on TwoBells, and they're the guys that built the new online store. All you have to do is, if you're interested on the stream, just type in the number and the letter 2B. Type in the number 2 and the letter B for TwoBells, and give us your email address so that I can email you that gift card code. So make sure you do that. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFE.com. Thanks for carrying the content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich of FormerLawman.com. And finally, Travis Chase with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen. And now, guys, if you're worried or interested, if you're worried too, about what we're going to be talking about today, let me go in and just, I'll whet the appetite in a few, but let me go in and just start off with the main topic right here. It was at yahoo.com, but don't let that fool you, because it's really a Fox News article. And it starts off saying CCP, and that is the Chinese Communist Party. It says that they are connected. Well, a CCP connected millionaire allegedly bankrolls Minneapolis agitator groups through dark money network. I found a fascinating article. You know, you guys are aware, because we, you know, you guys are some of the smartest people in the room when it comes to the news by listening to the show and letting us educate you every day. We're all aware, and this has been going on for years, about agitators, right? It's no news, but where do they get their money? These guys are not there on their own dime. They're getting paid to do this. And even in the cold weather, you know, like where Minneapolis is at and stuff, they're still out there. So who's taking care of it? And, you know, the new Trump DOJ said, hey, we're gonna track the money and find out. And lo and behold, they have. Now we got some more information about this. So on this particular one, the groups that are fueling anti-U.S. immigration and customs enforcement, which is ICE, they're fueling the unrest. It's beginning to come to light. One of the alleged financial backers of these agitators is a Chinese Communist Party advocate, and they traced him to a multitude of dark money organizations that are known to fuel the far left CCP, China Communist Party, influence extremism in the U.S. and across the globe. Now, earlier in the week, Fox News Digital, they did an investigation, and they found several organizations are acting as lead voices in physically mobilizing these agitators in Minneapolis, as well as communicating through multiple channels, and they're encouraging the agitators to take to the streets of Minnesota and other cities as well. The Party for Socialism and Liberation and the People's Forum, those two, they are the core groups who allegedly have been facilitating and pushing the agitators to organize on multiple occasions. And both organizations are largely subsidized by American former tech mogul Neville Roy Singham, according to these reports and to congressional probes. So this guy, despite facing federal investigations that are dating back decades, a former federal prosecutor that weighed in on this for Fox News Digital, he said this multimillionaire's move to China essentially shields him from being subpoenaed by U.S. authorities. So he ran amok of the law here in the U.S. He's already left and fled to China, and they say we can't touch him. Now, Singham, He's virtually untouchable, and his dark money networks continue to wreak havoc on the U.S. soil, according to this former prosecutor. So wait till you hear how much money he has to play around with, and maybe that'll give you some cause for concern. So remember, the bad guy's name in this is Singham. It's S-I-N-G-H-A-M, according to the article. He sold his IT consulting company back in 2017, so before COVID, but he sold it for $785 million, and he moves to Shanghai. And he was the focus of a 2023 New York Times expose. They unveiled his alleged connections to the Chinese Communist Party and his determination to finance extremism groups to embolden his radical ideology. And the Times reported that he's funneled over $250 million to dark money organizations in the U.S. here at home with little to no footprints. And some of the organizations, it says, they're vaguely named with office addresses under suspicious locations like general UPS mailboxes. He's 71 years old, and even though he's a U.S. citizen, he has turned Shanghai resident. And it's got some other stuff in there about, you know, another company that he has is connected to the Chinese Communist Party and what the mission is. But that's the nuts and bolts of the article. Jeff Weninger, I don't know if the information is going to do us much good if we can't go out, if we can't reach out and touch him unless someone's going to take the guy out. But what do you think?
Well, you know, unfortunately, you know, even as far back as 2000, when I was the assistant platoon leader for the mobile field force, which was all the boots on the ground dealing with the demonstrators at the 2000 Democratic National Convention in downtown Los Angeles. The reality is you always have these agitators that are being paid that come in and actually, you know, make things miserable for law enforcement. I mean, law enforcement's job's difficult enough when they're there to try to help facilitate people's First Amendment rights and then have to deal with the people that are crossing that line and, you know, need to be taken into custody or even rising to the point where you have to consider declaring an unlawful assembly. But when you have these people that are being paid and they're solely there to create havoc and commit crime and to escalate things, it's you know, it's just unconscionable. It's it makes law enforcement's job so much more difficult, and it's unfortunate. And you know, it's just something that we saw as far back as 2000, and you know, we're seeing it even at an escalated level today. And you know, we're divided enough as a country, let alone having somebody try to insert themselves and have these paid agitators to make things much worse. And everybody should be upset about this.
Now, that's a lot of money to play around with. I mean, and he's already spent over $250 million. That's pretty impressive. I mean, for somebody that's that motivated, that has that kind of money, that just simply wants to create chaos over here. Wow.
Yep. You know, and you see the political reasons why they do it. You know, my brother lives out of the country, and I spoke to him just this past weekend, and it's interesting how people outside the country perceive the United States. But a lot of the negative perceptions that they have are driven by the fact that you have these people that are paying these agitators and making this country look much worse, because it's specific targeted effort to make this country look bad for a political purpose that's being driven by these people with huge sums of money that can that are moving to places where they can't be touched. And you know, it's unfortunate, but we need to find a way to work with other countries wherein we can reach out and touch them.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad. I know it's taking a lot of work. The Biden DOJ didn't do it, so I'm glad now that we're identifying these guys and that we know where the money's coming from. And I have no doubt, as creative as the Trump team is, that they'll figure out a way to do something to curtail the money coming in, at least from this source. So interesting. Right. I'm impressed.
Right. Yeah.
Well, Jeff, let's move on to our next one. Let me go into what the appetite for the rest of the stories here. We've got LAPD chief telling Gavin Newsom, the governor, to kick rocks. That's an interesting one. We got a suicidal man fatally shot by LAPD officers when he runs at them with a knife. And then we got a woman who's threatening a Baltimore officer with a large knife. She ends up being shot in the leg. We got a federal judge barring the LAPD's use of some less lethal weapons at protest. And a Los Angeles police shooting an armed guy with a metal pipe after he breaks into an apartment. And then New Orleans police recruit taken in the ICE custody. Another recruit Not, well, we've had police officers too, but a recruit taken into ICE custody. That was an interesting story. So we've got about 40 some seconds before we take our first commercial break. So let me just go ahead and kind of whet the appetite for this one. RVMnews.com, and it's LAPD Chief tells Gavin Newsom to kick rocks. So it's Chief Jim McDonnell. And he said that his department will not enforce a new California law that's signed in the law by the governor, Gavin Newsom, because it restricts law enforcement officers from wearing face covering, citing safety and public safety concerns. More information about that in a second. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Galls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
And now it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And guys, we all know that our favorite product by Compliant Technologies is called the glove. And they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low optics manner, utilizing what they call their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. And of course, flagship product, we already know it's called the glove, has helped officers not only tens of thousands of times, but it's like over 250,000 times now. And that's with no injuries. And you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The glove has actually achieved that rare non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a handgun or a conducted energy weapon, the glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. We're back with Jeff Winninger, former LAPD commander, and we left off talking about LAPD story that we got from Red Voice Media at RVMnews.com. LAPD chief tells Gavin Newsom, the governor, to kick rocks. So we started off talking about how the LAPD chief, Jim McDonnell, said that his department will not enforce a new California law that was signed into law by the governor, and it restricts law enforcement officers from wearing face coverings, and it cites safety and public policy concerns. So back in September, Newsom, the governor, he signed the No Secret Police Act. Of course, this is all geared towards the feds, but they call it the Senate Bill 627. It prohibits federal, state, and local law enforcement officers from wearing ski masks, neck gaiters, or other face coverings that conceal their identities while they're performing official duties. The law applies broadly, including to federal agencies. I should say, especially the federal agencies, such as Immigration and Customs Enforcement and the Department of Homeland Security. The new law has, according to the article, has driven criticism from law enforcement officials who argue that it places local police in the position of confronting armed federal agents over minor violations. Now, Chief McDonnell of LAPD addressed the issue by appearing on Fox Los Angeles called Good Day LA. And I must admit, I was pretty impressed with what he said. He said, he made it clear that LAPD, his agency, that they absolutely will not take part in enforcing this directive, this law that Newsom passed. And he's got some very interesting quotes. He says, quote, the reality of one armed agency, LAPD, approaching another armed agency to create conflict over something that would be a misdemeanor at best or an infraction, it doesn't make any sense. And he goes on to say, it's not a good public policy decision, and it was not well thought out, in my opinion. McDonnell explained that enforcing law would run counter to LAPD, the agency's core responsibilities, particularly in volatile situations involving crowds and protests and federal enforcement actions. And he said from a practical standpoint that their role, LAPD's role, when they get to a scene, is to de-escalate the situation, not ramp it up. And he goes on to say, trying to enforce a misdemeanor violation or another law enforcement on another law enforcement agency, that it's not going to end well, and that's not going to be good. He further warned that such enforcement could increase the risk of violence or disorder. And he said, from a public safety standpoint, for anybody in that environment, especially if you have like a crowd that could get agitated or, you know, or trying to get their point across, it just wouldn't be good. And he just said, look, ICE agents, that the feds, they're just doing their jobs. And for us to come in there and try to create an enforcement action for wearing a mask, it's not a safe way to do business. And he wants no part of it. Jeff Winninger.
Well, listen, I couldn't agree with him more. You know, I worked for Chief Jim McDonald when he was an assistant chief. And you know, he's a very measured and well thought out individual. And I commend him and applaud him for taking what I would suggest is a political position, because in California, there is a lot of influence from a political standpoint to champion these liberal viewpoints. And to have had this legislation, I agree that it wasn't well thought out. I mean, it's kind of actually ridiculous. I mean, think about it, Chip. I mean, you know, two armed law enforcement officers from separate agencies are going to confront each other relative to one perhaps violating something as minor as perhaps an infraction or at best a misdemeanor. It's just not well thought out, and it doesn't make sense. I couldn't agree with him more, and I'm even more impressed not only with his wisdom, but with his willingness to stand up and speak against it, because you don't see all that many law enforcement executives and professionals that are taking that type of stand. So kudos to him.
Yeah, I wonder if Newsom ever saw this happening. I mean, he thought that he had it all figured out. He wanted to jam up another way to jam up the feds, you know, doing their thing with face cover. And we all know there's practical applications for covering your face, right? I mean, how many raids have I done where I didn't want my identity to be known because I was working in an undercover capacity, or maybe I was the undercover on that particular raid, and I wanted to be able to do more stuff like that within maybe the same group, and you just can't have your identity divulged. But now we've got people that are actively tracking ICE, trying to identify these guys and charge them criminally in the state of Minnesota, all these things, so where it's even more important now. So,
yeah, I just, yeah, I think it needs to be rethought, and it needs to be rescinded. Actually, it just doesn't make sense because really, if you think about it, to have something codified, what's the point if you can't enforce it? And I don't think anybody in their right mind would encourage another law enforcement agency to enforce that type of thing against another law enforcement agency. So it needs to be rescinded or rethought.
All right. Agreed. Well, guys, we got another break coming up, but we still have a few minutes away. So let's go ahead and go to our next story. And look, this next one, it's LAPD again. Yeah, we got a couple more of those. There's a video component to the story. So we're going to rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. We have a suicidal guy fatally shot by LAPD officers when he runs towards them with a knife.
Hey, Juan.
I know what you're doing. Juan, this is LAPD.
It's police.
It's police, man.
We need to get you some help, man.
Hey, Juan.
Just keep you coming. She's all right.
Hey, it's the police department.
Hey,
it's
Juan.
PD.
Juan.
And so we're in Hollywood this time. This guy that is shot, is 38 years old, and he's shot by LAPD officers in the Hollywood area. And they've identified him as Juan Guerrero Arojo. So officers from LAPD's Hollywood division, they get a dispatch 3:35 in the afternoon on Thursday. They're going to an apartment complex. There's reports of a guy that's possibly suicidal. And the comments of the call indicated the person reporting, who was Guerrero Arojo, So I don't know if that's, you know, the guy's brother or what, but he said that the suspect was armed with a knife, threatening to kill himself, speaking to Ghost, and that he expressed that he would kill anyone who approached his front door. And officers enter the building, and as they're nearing the door, they announce their presence, and then all of a sudden they hear him yelling from inside the apartment. So he abruptly opens up the door. The officers, they retreat a little bit down this narrow hallway, and but they're still communicating with him. Shortly afterwards, he suddenly exits the apartment. He starts running towards the officers. He's armed with a large kitchen knife. And now there's all of a sudden a shooting. And at the same time, a discharge of a 40 millimeter less lethal. So they're still getting the less lethal action in. And anyhow, the guy later dies. And Jeff, I know what the clock says, but we're going to go for an extra minute. So I'll let you go ahead and cover this.
Well, it's the one thing that I noticed, and it stood out, was initially when they showed up and they entered the apartment complex and got through the secure gate, there was one officer that took command and control. He essentially made himself the incident commander and started giving out specific roles and functions that each individual officer was going to be involved in, whether it was a lethal, less lethal, arrest team, that sort of thing. But, you know, and in listening to this, like ideas that, you know, so listeners know Chip will give us time stamps to look at this thing, but I like to watch the whole thing. So I listened to the entire 911 call. I mean, this guy was out there. I mean, you know, like you had mentioned it leading up to this about how he was talking about the ghosts and he was hearing all these voices and that, I mean, this guy was nuts. And there was an imminent threat to just anybody that could be in that area. And we can talk about the appropriateness of how the officers acted and behaved, conducted themselves.
All right, perfect. Hold that thought, guys. Hey, we're going to be going to a break, but we will be back in a couple minutes. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by former LAPD commander, Lieutenant Jeff Winninger. And I note that before the commercial break, we were talking about some LAPD stuff, Jeff. We just covered this new use of force. There's a video component to this as well. It all happened LAPD style. You want to refresh our users what you were talking about, if you have more commentary on that one?
Yeah, I mean, there's an individual, he called in a 911, and he was clearly nuts. I mean, he was hearing voices talking about ghosts and how he was going to kill them. And if anybody came to the door, he was going to kill them. And so, you know, here are the officers, you know, with this information that have to try to address this person and try to get some type of voluntary compliance, which is not likely. But the reality is that this individual is an imminent threat to really anybody that's in that apartment complex. Whether he's in his apartment alone or not, you know, that can change in a split second. We saw that when the officers arrived. You know, they didn't go to the door. They initiated verbal contact from a distance, but he had a very significant knife, and he ran at the officers and clearly posing immediate threat of serious bodily injury or death, which resulted in not only deployment less lethal, but lethal. And he ultimately succumbed to his injuries. But, you know, I was impressed with how the officers showed up, and there was somebody that took command and control and identified the various areas of responsibility, whether it was less lethal, lethal, or arrest team. And, you know, I was impressed with all that. So.
All right. Well, thanks, Jeff. Perfect timing. We've got another LAPD story with a video component as well. So let's go to video three. We're still at rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. So we got LA, Los Angeles police. They shoot an armed guy with a metal pipe after an apartment break-in.
Where is he? Entró. A29, he made entry into the residence. He's gonna be inside. We're gonna have victims inside. Hey, what's up, Brian? Hey!
¿Dónde está?
What's up, Brian? Hey! Hey, drop the pole!
Drop it!
Drop the pole!
Drop it! Drop it!
All right, goodbye.
Drop it!
Stop it! Taser! Get on the ground! Get on the ground! Go! Get on the ground! Get on the ground! Find him! Put it out! Get on the ground!
And this thing? Careful with the.
Hey, drop the ball.
Drop it.
Drop the ball.
Drop it.
Drop what?
Drop it. Drop it. Taser.
Get on the ground.
On the ground.
Now, this is a pretty fluid situation. We have a male and female officer that are responding. The pronunciation of, is it Winnetka? Is that what it is?
Winnetka, yeah.
Okay. So police respond to a break-in. So it's, and you know what? It doesn't give all the information, but it implies that this guy did an armed burglary of an occupied residence, because the dude inside got injured too. It doesn't say how he got injured, but it's in San Fernando Valley. So it's on Tuesday, and police ended up open fire on this bad guy, Edgar Ramirez, who they say was armed with a metal pipe. So it's 2 o'clock in the morning when police get the call. The guy's breaking into a unit, according to LAPD. When the officers get there, they encounter the suspect, order him to drop what they described as a metal pipe. But he kind of surprises the officer. I'll get into my notes in a second. The suspect doesn't comply, of course, and officers deploy a taser. That's ineffective. And I think there were at least 2 taser deployments. And then there's a physical struggle, which took me by surprise, because they got close enough to where the guy's got a pipe. They didn't go lethal yet, but now there's a physical struggle with this guy, trying to detain him. And the suspect was struck in the forearm when he ends up getting shot and taken to the hospital in stable condition. A resident of the unit was broken into, also suffered minor injuries, was treated at the hospital before being released, but it doesn't say what it is. So, and I'm looking at my notes here, this guy, they can hear him smashing windows upstairs. And by the time they run up the flight of stairs to get to the second level, and they thought that he had a baseball bat. But now the guy's inside the apartment, and at the 8:45 mark, they observed him inside the apartment. The door is open. He's got a metal pole, and then he comes out. Ineffective taser. And at 9:03, the armed guy advances on the officers. Oh, there is a single shot, I guess, at that time, and then a struggle. But the article kind of puts it in the wrong order. But so there's a single shot, which again is a little bit of a flag, because it sounded like only one shot instead of a double tap. And then there's a fight. And then they do a slow motion with freeze frame, which is pretty impressive. Jeff Wininger.
Yeah, the you saw something a little different here, because you had the initial officers that responded. And when you compare it to the other incident, it wasn't as controlled. Actually, one of the officers tells the female officer, hey, slow down. And she independently continued into the apartment complex and continued to deploy. And like I had said, what I liked on the other one, you didn't see here. You didn't see this conversation, deployment of responsibilities, identification, who's going to be responsible for what. And you had a little bit of an independent operators going on. But, this was kind of dicey, because you had people that were inside that apartment complex, and this guy was armed with a weapon that could pose a significant risk of serious bodily injury or death. Not only to the officers that were responding, but also the occupants of the apartment. And then to make things even more difficult to navigate within that environment, you had all the broken glass from the windows that were being broken, that were on the deck. And this was a second story, where you have the open walkway with a small wrought iron railing, or I guess fence, or whatever you would call it, where if you got in a physical altercation, someone could easily be thrown over the second story. So,
oh, yeah.
It definitely rose to a level where force was necessary, lethal force was necessary and appropriate. Had it not been used, who knows how long this fight could have gone on, and to what extent officers perhaps would have been injured because of the number of threats, not just by the suspect, but the environment in which they were having a physical altercation with him.
Thanks. All good stuff. We've got another one where the female at the end of the hallway, and it's not an LAPD one. I think it's Boston or somewhere, but they end up shooting her in the leg. So there's a lot of similarities between some of these things. Let's go to our last LAPD story, because I know that you're on borrowed time. Rumble.com. This is Butter the Channel again. Actually, you know what? That's not the one I wanted to cover. We're going to hold that, and we're going to go with a different one. And this is the update one, where it's from LAPD. LAtimes.com. Federal judge bars LAPD's use of some less lethal weapons at protests, though, is what we're talking about. So this federal judge banned them from so-called less lethal launchers at protests. They found the department violated previous court restrictions by using these projectile weapons, is what they call them, to disperse crowds at last summer's mass demonstrations against ICE. In a ruling, so female judge, Wednesday is when this happened, Judge Consuelo B. Marshall, she sided with a contempt motion that was filed by attorneys. We've got LAPD officials. They end up being sent some information here, and this is where it gets really interesting here. It was a department-wide memo announcing an immediate moratorium on the use of 40-millimeter weapons in light of Marshall's ruling. And then there was a preliminary injunction handed down by Marshall, the judge, and back in 2021, it placed restrictions on the weapons use, including requiring specialized training for handlers, et cetera, et cetera. So we've only got 3 minutes. And so, but Black Lives Matter is involved in this, and I'm surprised to even see their name on any court stuff going on. I figured they had already blown through all the money that they had gotten a few years ago. But Jeff Wininger.
Yeah, you know, the LAPD, for a number of different reasons, have had their hands tied. After the George Floyd demonstrations, the state of California announced all of its infinite wisdom, had this Assembly Bill 48, which significantly restricted law enforcement's ability to deploy less lethal, as well as gas during demonstrations. And essentially, you're restricted to the point where you can only deploy them if you're met with an incident where somebody poses serious bodily injury or death to an officer or to somebody else, or you're using it to try to quell an objectively dangerous situation. So it's really high mark that you have to reach before you can deploy it. And it has to be target specific. You can't use it indiscriminately to disperse a crowd, any less lethal. So then, which makes your job much more difficult. But then to make it even more restrictive, you had these court rulings where they're prohibiting them from using these 40-millimeter less lethal munitions at all, period. So then they're reduced to other less lethal devices that they can use, but they're perhaps less effective. And the reality is that you're talking about, it's just like a sponge round that is the most appropriate one to use if you're going to be target specific. And yes, there are times when you're going to have instances where people are struck by those rounds in places that they're not intended to be struck, but that doesn't mean they were intended to be struck there. I mean, things happen, things are fluid, people are moving. Those sorts of things. But so it is unfortunate. It makes the job much more difficult for law enforcement to deal with these types of crowds, because they're not dealing just with people that are exercising the First Amendment right. As we talked about earlier in this show, we're getting paid agitators that are there to stir the pot, to make things, you know, more difficult for everybody involved. And it's really unfortunate.
Yeah, I totally agree. Let me ask you this, Jeff, and we only got seconds. Do you guys use gas a lot for dispersion? I mean, gas, in my opinion, is a fantastic dispersion agent. Do you guys use gas a lot?
You know, when I was there, we didn't. What I am seeing is I see them using it more frequently than when I was there. But right. That may be a result of the limitations of less lethal.
We are back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecution, and disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, if you're having an agency, the founder, Daniel Kelly's got a deal for you. You can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information and watch the cool videos. Again, that is GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. And the law enforcement talk show. You know, I know you're thinking, well, wow, before commercial break, we had two guys. Now we just got Chip. Yep. Jeff Winninger has to do a News Nation thing on TV. So he had the bug out. So you're going to have the last 15 minutes with me. But it's all good. So look, we're going to talk about another story with a video component. So we're still at rumble.com, and our favorite law enforcement video channel is called This Is Butter. And while I say that, let me go to remind everybody that, you know, during the live show, we talk about some stories that have a video component, but during a live show, it's just too difficult to try to play live videos. And then a lot of our audience are podcasters or radio people that can't see the video component anyhow. So what I want to remind everybody is that we're on four platforms and we have two different shows. All right. So if you start doing the math, I'm just trying to break this down as simple as possible. We're primarily a nationally syndicated radio show, but we're on satellite radio, we're on terrestrial radio, and we're on internet radio. So we're on 43 terrestrial radio stations right now. So that's a huge radio presence. And our second one, we're on TV, and we're also on, like, you know, like Roku, Amazon Fire Stick, that kind of stuff. And we're also have a huge podcast presence, and we're on social media. Every live show that we do, we stream to over 1 million followers on social media. So those are the four platforms that we're on. And as far as the two shows, the two types of shows, we do a live show Monday through Friday, and that is from 12 to 1 o'clock Eastern time. But then we take a copy of that live show video, and producer Will embed those videos that we're talking about into the show. He'll put pictures of the good guys and the bad guys that pop up as we talk about them. And that produced version of the show comes out the next day at 9 o'clock in the morning. And that happens Tuesday through Saturday. And so that's really a great way to watch a show, because if you live show, you're not going to see the videos. Even if you're watching the streaming portion, you're not seeing the live video that we're talking about. But if you wait less than 24 hours later, just and watch that one at 9 o'clock the next morning, you get to see all the videos happening as we're talking about them. Just a great experience. So don't forget about that. So in this next story, a woman who was threatening Baltimore officer with a large knife is shot in the leg.
Drop the knife. Drop the knife.
And so she's a 48-year-old woman, and she is marching towards officers and threatening them with a large knife. And an officer ends up opening fire, but he strikes her in the leg. Now, the officers, I know they had lasers. I'm just not sure if the laser, I can't remember whether the lasers were on the taser, because you know, all these tasers have lasers pretty much, or if it was on the firearm. I'm just wondering whether they shot her in the leg on purpose. But if they hit her twice in the leg, I'm kind of thinking that they took a risk by trying to get her in the leg when she's advancing on them. And this was released by Baltimore PD. So in the footage, officers debated. They're in the hallway. It's another narrow hallway. They're debating on how they're going to do their thing. And while they're discussing this, this woman, Autumn Elizabeth Denny, she's 48 years old. You know, she comes out of her apartment, and now she comes and she appears in the hallway, and she's got like a knife and like another weapon in her hand. She ended up suffering non-lethal injuries and later was charged with assault and related weapons charges. The officer that shot her was Kevin Wilson, and he's on administrative leave pending an IA investigation, which is normal. So in the video, the officers, like I said, are wrestling with how to approach this mental health issue, and they're finding blood on the outside of the apartment door, and they're expressing concern that someone else might be inside. So I can almost see these guys like, man, we don't even know what we got, but there's like blood everywhere, and there could be somebody inside, you know, bleeding out or whatever. And then they hear the woman inside screaming expletives, and ultimately, this is on the ninth floor of this complex. She exits the apartment. She's got that large knife. They start scrambling backwards at the end of the hallway, and now there's a standoff between this woman with the knife, and they've got a taser and they've got guns. So she ends up walking towards these guys, And in the meantime, they're requesting, trying to get more protective equipment, like a shield that will prevent her from stabbing them. So it is a lethal situation. They just really don't want to have to kill her. And they're asking for a battering ram in case they have to bust down a door. And they're called, anyhow, so after she exits the apartment and starts walking towards them, that's when they have to do business. And it says that the, it was a machete in one hand and a knife in the other hand. And so they're creating distance, but then she starts closing it. So they use a stun gun on her, or taser, and they demand that she drops the weapons. Taser didn't work, you know, at least immediately. They had to shoot her, but she got shot in the leg. And then they're asking her to crawl forward towards them. She gets up and she starts walking, and they end up, you know, getting her again to get her down on the ground. And she just wants to die, yelling, "Kill me, kill me, kill me." And when she stood up again, they got her down by using the taser, which worked effectively and got her on the ground. And then they were able to handcuff her and stuff. So we have a good story. She survived, and we had a good taser deployment at the same time as well. So I'm looking at the comments here. Apparently you guys love St. Augustine and stuff. Any questions or commentary about the videos or the stories that I'm covering, feel free to type them in, because I can see what you guys are typing in right now. And that's that last one was from Betty Dunn on Facebook. So, and thanks for watching. Yeah, I'm looking at all the commentary over on Rumble too. So thanks, guys. You know, you love it when everything comes into place. I don't recommend officers going for extremities. Look, I'm telling you that this officer probably was close enough, and he had enough people to back him up. If he would have missed, because it's hard to hit, you know, moving body parts when someone's approaching you, and then they get that forward momentum. So even if you hit them and they're close enough, they can still get to you and stab you. There's nothing you can do about it. I'm glad it worked out in the situation. I wouldn't say it's an example of what they do, because people always say, why don't you shoot them in the hand or the leg or the arm? It's just, you know, when you try to do that, you're going to end up getting hurt or killed, or someone else is going to, because you're just not effectively going to be able to do that. Very rare situation. So I'm glad that this thing, you know, worked out. We've got about 3 minutes. So let me go to our next one here. We're going to jump over to New Orleans. And this is NOLA.com, you know, standing for New Orleans, Louisiana. A New Orleans police recruit is taken into ICE custody, according to New Orleans Police Department Superintendent. Gee, I wonder, why would ICE be taking a police recruit into custody? Let's find out. So the New Orleans Police Department recruit was taken into custody on Wednesday morning by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So that would be ICE. And this is according to Superintendent Ann Kirkpatrick, who doesn't get enough credit for being with the agency. The officer, who Kirkpatrick did not identify, had lived in the U.S. for 10 years, had no criminal background, and Kirkpatrick pointed reporters to ICE for comment. And here's a quote from Kirkpatrick saying that, "I've been told that he will not be given a bond here and that he will be in the process of removal." So I suspect, well, let's before I give you my suspicions, let's read through this. The recruit successfully cleared a background check by the New Orleans Police Department. Doesn't say a lot, because we're talking about New Orleans. They've dropped the ball a lot of times. In fact, you know, they were on what, consent decree for a long time, right? And they started their hiring process back in June of 2025. He appeared to be a lawful resident with a driver's license and social security number, and he passed an employment screening through E-Verify that was authorized by Social Security Administration and also by U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. He also passed a background criminal check, according to NCIC, and they said they did their due diligence, and that they were not lax on all the things that they could have been. But here's where it gets better. New Orleans learned of the recruit's apprehension on Wednesday morning, shared his file with ICE, which advised that the department was to review regarding immigration related issues. So according to New Orleans Police Department, the recruiting website, it's joinnopd.org. I'm hoping people don't go there and try to get a job. Applicants who are legally authorized to work in the United States may apply to the department and are not required to be U.S. citizens. So that is a huge flag. That's why New Orleans has got the reputation they do. While they've had federal oversight, they're hiring just stupid things like this, hiring non-citizens, and you wonder what in the world could go wrong, hiring non-citizens to become police officers. That's just a huge flag. Even if they are here legally, but I suspect this guy got a court date that he didn't appear to. And, you know, they're putting themselves in a position where they're losing a recruit who ends up being picked up by ICE. A judge in the Immigration Court of Atlanta signed the order on December the 5th. So a judge signed the order to remove the recruit. And this guy lived in Georgia before joining the New Orleans Police Department. The recruit was taken into the ICE custody without incident on Wednesday morning. So that's the way this happened and how they rolled on this one. So no surprises here. But guys, like in, you know, California's been advertising hiring cops, you know, that are not U.S. citizens. That is a big mistake. And it's just a huge red flag. So no shocker that it happened to this particular agency. It wouldn't happen to my agency here in Tampa and most of the other agencies that are in, you know, red states that are not sanctuary jurisdictions and all that stuff. So I think that I know I'm preaching to the choir. I know you guys get it. You know, you guys are educated enough to where you understand the bad things that can happen. But as a U.S. citizen, I certainly don't want a non-citizen with police powers to be telling me, you know, what to do. There's just something just raw and wrong about that. Guys, we've got, you know, I appreciate you guys watching the show. Thanks again to Jeff Winninger for making it before he had to go do News Nation. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue, at woundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out and the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. So if you're looking for organizations to support that's not going to embarrass you, look no further. Also, a shout out to galls.com, compliantechnologies.com, gunlearn.com, mymedicare.live, safeguardrecruiting.com, and twobells.com. Thanks for watching the show. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.